You're listening to episode 29. Welcome to Cultivating the Lovely, the podcast. This is the podcast all about pouring the labor, care, and study into the roles that God has given us as wives, moms, women, and His children. It is meant to inspire us to be living with passion, intention, beauty, and delight in the everyday moments right where we're at. I'm your hostess, Mackenzie Monroe from BoldTurquoise.com and CultivatingTheLovely.com, along with the Cultivating the Lovely show on Periscope. Today, I am so excited to have a much-loved guest back on the show. Trisha Goyer is joining me to give a little update on her life since we last heard from her last summer, actually. You might remember they were still trying to get into a new groove with their big family, and now I'm happy to report that things have settled down a bit, and Trisha and her family are doing so well. And she's going to talk about all of that, plus her brand new book, A Secret Courage, in this episode. Now, I do have to say, I got my hands on this book early. It just released on April 1st, and I love it. I hadn't read it yet when we were doing the interview, but now I have so fallen in love with these characters and the time period. It's just such a wonderful book. I can't wait for you guys to read it too. And I love that it's part of a whole new series that Trisha is creating around this whole idea of World War II espionage. And I think that you guys are really going to enjoy it. But you get to hear about all of that more in the podcast. Right now, I want to acknowledge our sponsor for this show. This episode is again brought to you by Jelly Telly. And today I want to specifically mention a great new resource that's part of Jelly Telly that I think that you guys are really going to like. If you want to teach your kids about Jesus this Easter and not just about eggs, then Jelly Telly's 5-minute family devotional is a perfect solution. This devotional series includes 8 days of short video devotions that will help your family celebrate the importance of Jesus' life, death, and resurrection. Each day includes a short video and optional extra resources, including a scripture reading and coloring page. All you have to do is gather your kiddos and press play. It's really that simple. It's easy to watch on your TV, phone, or tablet. Jelly Telly is available on the App Store, Google Play, Roku Channel Store, and supported Kindle devices. As I mentioned, that's how my kids usually use it. You can get the devotionals plus stream 116 other beloved Christian shows and movies for only $4.99 a month or $49.99 for a whole year. If you visit JellyTelly.com today and use the coupon code CULTIVATETHELOVELY, all in capital letters, just for Cultivating the Lovely podcast listeners, you can get a 10-page Jesus coloring book download and your first week of Jelly Telly absolutely free so you can give it a go and see just how awesome it can be for your family. All right, so much thanks to Jelly Telly, and now let's get on with the show and get right down to the nitty-gritty with Trisha Goyer. Trisha, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Mackenzie. It's awesome to be here.
I'm so excited to have you on because a lot has happened in your life since we talked last. So it's going to be fun to kind of let people see the glimpse, you know, 7 or 8 months later after we last talked and talk about some of your new projects.
Oh, I'd love that.
So can you give everyone who may be a new listener or just doesn't remember a little refresher on who you are?
Yeah, I'm Trisha Goyer, and I've been married to John for 26 years, and we have 10 kids and now 4 grandkids. And our 10 kids came 3 through biological and then 7 through adoption. So we've adopted 7 kids in the last, I guess, 7 years now, because we got Alyssa when she was just a newborn baby. So it's been crazy. We have just loved adding these kids, but has had a lot added a lot of chaos to our life too. I'm also a writer. I blog, I write articles and short stories for magazines, and I write books. So I think I need a count. There's like, I think 68 now. I don't know, something
like
that.
That's so amazing. Books. I saw something you were putting on Facebook, like, what do I take to the conferences? There's too many to choose from. That's just amazing.
Yeah, I'm speaking at the Teach Them Diligently conferences. I'm speaking at 3 of them this year, which, you know, I took a couple years off from speaking when we added the sibling group of 4 girls. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm like, okay, I need to get my mind back into conference speaking.
Yeah.
I've just been staying at home, which has been awesome, but I love getting out there and connecting with people too.
Yeah, that's so fun. And so if people don't realize this, those 7 kids that you adopted in the last 7 years, what are their age ranges now?
Okay, so Alyssa, we adopted her as a newborn, and she's almost, she's seven. And Casey and Bella, we got them as a sibling group when they were 2 and 5, and now they're 6 and 9. I always have to, like, think a minute.
Yeah, I bet.
And then we got a sibling group of 4 girls, and the adoption was finalized last year, and they were from foster care. And they are now 12, 14, 14, and 17.
Wow. So, yeah, for anyone who's just like, oh, wow, that's amazing. Like, it's even more amazing, I think, when you hear their ages, because that's a big thing to tackle and bring into your family. And it's just so admirable.
And yeah, they're all out of birth order, too. So
yeah,
we have like 3 firstborns, 3 babies, all these middle kids, and they're all like mixed up.
Yeah, I bet. That makes for a really interesting household for sure. And you also, so you were saying you have grandkids and a daughter-in-law. And so I just wanted to say hi, Katie, because I heard you're a fan of the show. So hello.
She's going to like be so excited.
That's so fun. Okay. I want to jump right into your latest project that just came out a few days ago on April 1st. You had a brand new World War II novel come out called A Secret Courage. So I want to just hear a little bit more about this novel and what it's all about, because you've written quite a bit of World War II fiction.
Yeah, I have. Well, this is set in London, and then a village outside of London during World War II. The village is called Medmenham, and it's over by Henley on the Thames. And I was able to go to London with John probably 3 or 4 years ago. He travels for work, and he was going to London. I'm like, I'm going to London.
Yeah, I bet.
And actually, my daughter's a missionary in the Czech Republic, and so she met us over there, too. So we just had 3 days going around, and I love World War II. I've been able to interview a lot of veterans and visit a lot of World War II historical sites, but I'd never done anything set in London. So while I was there, I went to the Imperial War Museum and walked around and just... I could just picture, like, because it's so old city. There's still the old bookshops and there's the old cafes. You know, it just is exactly like it's there. So it just, my mind started going. And at first I thought about writing about, like, the women that did all the decoding of the secret messages, because a lot of women did that.
Yeah.
But I thought, you know, there's been a lot of books about that. So I started researching more. And there's actually this really amazing unit of women that I haven't found any other... novels written about, or Christian novels written about. And so it's the Photograph Reconnaissance Unit. And in World War II, you know, they would send the planes over Germany and over other Nazi occupied lands, and they would take photos. So they take photos and they could figure out where Hitler's troops were and where they were trying to build secret weapons. Sometimes the Nazis would turn factories into, like, instead of making shoes, they would be making airplane parts. And our reconnaissance was the best out of any other country. The Allies just did a really good job on reconnaissance, but it was women who went through all these photographs, and they pored over them. They found all these details. They figured out all these clues from the way the shadows fell. They could tell if something was camouflaged. And I'm like, that is so fascinating. And
that's so interesting.
The cool part is outside, they're like about an hour out of London in this little village, and they lived in this huge estate. So someone had this huge house that was taken over by the Allies. And so there's this huge mansion, basically villa. It looked like a villa with all these gardens overlooking the Thames in the countryside of England. And here are these women researching all these things.
That sounds amazing.
Nazi spies and like all this other cool stuff. So it was a really fun book to write. You know, it's a little bit of a romance, a little bit of a spy novel, and then just hopefully people can hear more about what these women did in the war.
That's so amazing. I know I've always been so impressed with your World War II work. Well, I mean, all of your work is so well researched. When I read, I've actually mentioned just a couple episodes ago, Love Finds You in Victory Heights, Washington, which is one of my favorite books. But I live in Washington, and I had an uncle who worked for Boeing and everything. And so when I heard all this stuff about the Boeing plants and everything, it was just like, whoa, that just, it hits so close to home. And I didn't have any idea about it. So that's always so fun to me when I read your books, because I feel like I'm going to learn something. And you just, you do such a good job with the research.
And that's the cool thing about fiction, is you just get to weave in all these things. And I get so excited, like when I discover just these little facts that most people don't know, like about the reconnaissance unit or even about this village and on the Thames, it used to be an old fort there, and that ties into the spy part of it. And it's just like so cool. I bought this book from like 1910 that had like the layout of this village, and I was able to use that to weave in my plot. And it's so, I feel like I'm like a treasure hunter almost.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is so cool. I get to add this into my book and weave it all together. I was able to weave in some of the songs during the time and some of the books during the time and, you know, secret messages to those things. So it's super fun to be able to do that. And so funny because I never planned on writing about World War II.
Yeah.
I was actually on a trip with two friends and they were both researching for novels and I was along for the ride. And, you know, this is before I had any book publishers and I just wanted to write sweet romances and not really think about it. And we went to a concentration camp and just hearing some of the true stories just inspired me. And I was able to come home and, like I said, interview World War II veterans. Mm-hmm. And once I started just hearing their stories and what they experienced, and, you know, these are farmers from Kansas that ended up in Europe, you know, fighting in Germany and Austria. It's just like, this is so amazing. And that really just got me hooked. And so this is the first in the series. And then I'm writing the second one.
Oh, yay.
Right now it's called Daring Rescue. And so I'm working on that right now.
That's so fun. I love when you know there's more coming. Like, it really helps you get invested in the book. I wanted to, can you work on a sequel to Victory Heights? Because that was a great one.
That was so fun. And Oceana, who is my co-writer, she lives in the Seattle area.
Okay.
And I flew over there. And so we were able to go to, like, the Boeing has like a whole bunch of they have an archive library. So we were able to go there, and then we were able to interview, I think, like 6 or 7 of the Rosies, the women that worked, and they were awesome. Like, one of them, Georgie, got up and was like showing us some dance moves. It was just like, it was so cool. I mean, looking back now, and so many, I think most of the people that I've interviewed have passed away since I've interviewed them. But I'm like, what an honor. I have a lot of the recordings of them sharing their stories with me. And it's like, I'm just this mom of these kids. And I'm able to like talk to these people that seem like ordinary people. Like, you'd never think about it as if you pass them in the grocery store, that this woman just wants riveted airplane wings.
Yeah.
And like, did all these amazing things.
That's so cool. I know for me, World War II hits, I don't know, a special note. I'm always interested in reading about it and stuff, because years ago I was in a play called I Never Saw Another Butterfly, and I played this girl who survived, and she was the only one who survived one of the Jewish ghettos, and all of her family. It was Terezin. And it was just so impactful because I was fairly young and I had to do so much research and the same kinds of things that you're talking about, like meeting survivors who had lived in ghettos and been in and out and, you know, talking about their family members and how they survived. And it was all the little details that they would tell that really made it come alive. And I so had to put myself in their shoes, which as a writer, I'm sure you're having to do also in order to write from their perspective. And it's just, even though obviously you weren't there, you feel a special connection to what they went through because you've had to portray that and really get to know that. And so I think you just do such a good job of bringing all those little details to light that really make it personal.
Yeah. And like you in that production, I almost feel like I lived that life for a while, you know, because I'm in their mind and their dialogue and just with the experience. And I'm going to send you, I'll send you my novel Night Song, because it's part of it is in Terezin in the camp. And I've been there before in the Czech Republic and saw the drawings of the children, because there's a lot of children in that camp. All the wealthy Jews, and you know this because you did the play, but a lot of the wealthy Jews, or even movie stars and directors and musicians, were sent there with their families and kids. And that's in the Czech Republic where my daughter lives.
I mean, I had to do the accent and everything, so it's like you really You really have to immerse yourself in it. But yeah, for anybody who happens to be interested, you can get the book of the different poems and drawings that the kids did. Mm-hmm. That's called actually I Never Saw Another Butterfly. And it's very, very sad, but it's beautiful to see that even in the midst of all that darkness and, you know, hardship that they were living in, they were still drawing and creating art and trying to make the best of what they were going through.
Yeah, there's school teachers that would like, okay, we're having class, and they had no food, they had nothing, and they would make paints out of dirt, and I don't know.
Yeah,
what I mean. It was just amazing.
Yeah,
I saw some of those original paintings that are in that book in the museum in Prague.
Wow,
so it's so cool. And when I wrote Night Song, it was my second World War II novel. It was in 2004 when I was writing it, and my son, my oldest son, was 13 at the time, and that was the age of the main character in my book.
Wow.
And I just bawled writing that book because I could just picture, like, what if my son had to go through all this?
So, yeah.
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 There's a happy ending.
Well, that's good.
People are like, I don't want to read World War II. I'm like, no, at least there'll be some, I mean, there might be hard stuff, but there's going to be a little bit of a happy ending at least at the end.
No, I have to say, I read Songbird Under a German Moon, and I was blindsided.
Oh, yeah.
I did not know what I was getting myself into. It was like late at night.
I went back and forth on that.
I was late at night.
We won't give the details, but I went back and forth like, yeah, should I?
Yeah, late at night I was reading and I kept thinking like, I just got to keep reading because it's going to get better. But yes, everyone, I recommend it. Just, you're forewarned. It's a little scary. Well, I appreciate that there are actual Christian World War II novels that are solid. You know, it's not just like a bunch of fluff, and there's room for the fluff. You know, like, I love reading a good fluff book every once in a while. But it's so fun to be able to read like really solid Christian fiction that's also historical. And I just think you do such a good job of it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. And it's just a neat, you know, weaving in that worldview, you know.
Yeah.
There were people that turned to God and sought him, and, you know, he was there even during these darkest times. And
yeah.
So I think, yeah, that's so important because there's so much darkness to remember that there are those glimmers of light.
Yes. We just watched Hacksaw Ridge last night.
Oh, yeah.
Night,
yeah, I saw that.
It was that same kind of like, oh, wow, like, look at this guy who kept turning to the Lord and trying to do what he knew was right, you know. And so it's good to have those worldviews pop up, especially right now in today's culture.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we've covered, obviously, you find a lot of time to write. That's what you do. But how are you on finding time to read?
I am getting better.
Yeah.
You know, when we first started adopting these kids, I mean, it's just so time consuming.
Oh, and, I'm sure.
They have therapies, and they have, you know, the trauma therapies and occupational therapies and speech therapies, and then I'm homeschooling them. And so, you know, I think for a couple years I was just pouring myself out, and I was still making time to write because, I mean, writing does fuel me, but I was hardly reading. Like, I'd read like 5 books a year, which for me is not very many. And I'm like, you know, this has to change.
Yeah.
And so, one thing I do is I listen to audiobooks. So, when I'm folding clothes or laundry or making dinner, doing all those things. But lately I've been really, really, I would say within the last 6 months, just really trying to add in more just sitting down with a book and laying down with a book, because it just makes me happy. It gives me joy. And, you know, the laundry is still going to be there.
Yeah.
I'm never going to get to the point where it's all finished, and the house is never going to get to the point where it's completely clean. And, you know, because there's 11 people in our house. We have our 7 younger kids, and then we have our 22-year-old that lives at home still, and then my grandma and my husband and I. It's like, I'm never going to arrive, because we always think like, okay, once I get everything done, then I'll make time to read. Well, it's never going to be done.
Yeah.
So I just come to the point like, I'm just going to read.
Yeah.
And so I have a bookshelf right by my bed, and I've been doing that a lot more, just reading novels that I really enjoy, reading research books, and instead of just like skimming them to find the research I need, just, you know, really taking time to read them. So I've been discovering that I love that. That's like my hobby.
Yeah.
That's something that mom needs. And so I've been doing that a lot more.
That's so good to hear. I know I kind of went through that a couple years ago. It was like having lots of babies and little kids, and just wasn't finding time to read. And actually having to realize, like, no, this is something I really enjoy, and it fills me up, and it fuels me, and it helps me feel intelligent, and like, I need this. I need to do this for myself.
Yeah, and it's so good. And I've been using Goodreads now, too, because I would never, like, track what I read. And so just this year, that was, like, my January resolution. Like, I'm going to have – I set my goal is I'm going to read 100 books. And so that includes audio, so that's not, like, really reading. But, you know, go through 100 books this year, and I'm at 12. I don't know if I'm going to hit 100. But – you know, and I keep track of them. I'm like, okay, I can do this, but it relaxes me.
Yeah. And I love Goodreads too. I think that was a big motivator. I realized last year, even if I can say I read 1% of my book, like, feels like progress. I'm actually, you know, moving forward.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So on that same kind of idea of books and you're making it a bigger priority for yourself, last time we talked about the importance of read alouds in your life with especially your adopted daughters. So have you continued to see the fruit of that, or what's the update on that?
Yeah, you know, that was really a focus because as I read aloud, started reading aloud to them, like, I've always read aloud to the little kids and they're like, it was so new to our big girls and almost like, why are you reading out loud to me? I'm like 13 at the time. Yeah. I'm like 13. I can read a book. And, but then they started to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And, a lot of our homeschool, I probably read aloud an hour and a half to 2 hours because I could sit all the kids together.
Yeah.
And I'm like schooling all of them at one time instead of running back and forth between all their little workbooks or whatever they're doing. So we do a lot of reading out loud and it's been awesome. I know they become better listeners, but also just like hearing my voice and you know, the bonding of like, they haven't had me in their lives all these years. And so it's just like this bonding just to hear my voice and hear the stories. And then me share some of my favorite stories. Like we read through the whole Little House series. We just finished the other day. And actually my husband reads out loud now at after dinner.
Oh, so that's good too.
Just finished The Magician's Nephew last week and we started The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe with them. And so now, you know, John's always read aloud too to our older kids. And so now they get to experience that. And they, you know, when they first moved in, they were reading like vampire books.
Yeah.
Like stuff that I'm like, you really don't need to be reading that.
Yeah.
But they had no parents to like tell them what to read or what not to read. And so I've like, you know, we don't go to the library and pick up those kind of books. And I buy books for them. We go to Goodwill probably at least twice a month. And here at our local Goodwill, there's always a lot of really good Christian books, novels that we pick up. And they're reading a lot more. So in addition to me reading out loud to them in our front hall, and those are the books that they can choose from. And I started at first, they had to read out loud 15 minutes a day. I mean, read to themselves, 15 minutes after their schoolwork was done. And they're like, it was like this chore to read 15 minutes. And then I moved it up to 30 minutes. And then I moved it up to 45 minutes.
Wow.
And just last week, I'm like, okay, read aloud for, read to yourself for an hour. And they said an hour. And I said, yeah, but no one complained and they did it.
So, that's awesome.
Yeah. They're discovering like, oh, I actually like this book thing.
Yeah.
Like, so I think it's just so greatly benefited just our whole family culture, and they're learning a lot. And, you know, they learned good morals and truths and how people live and interact in the pages of novels.
Yes.
And so they get so much out of it. And then it's so funny, they always come up, do you know this person? And I'm like, yeah, she's my friend. They're like, you know everybody.
That's awesome.
Like, I've been writing novels for 20 years.
So. Yeah. That's so good. And I think what you were hitting on there about learning about character and stuff. I mean, I've heard people in the past kind of like poo-poo on fiction. Like, oh, you can't learn like biblical truths. It's just pretend, you know, it's not real. But I think some of the best examples I had of like a Christian walk when I was growing up came out of fiction, and they can be so life shaping. Like you really can, because you're not just reading the principles that somebody's telling you to put into practice. You're seeing it put into practice in somebody's life, whether it's real or not. You're seeing how it can play out.
Absolutely.
I think that's so important.
And the challenges people face. Yeah. One of my daughters just read a Lynn Austin book and it had slavery and just, I mean, are we going to stand up for another person? You know, I mean, just all these good things that apply today in our lives. And in addition to reading a lot of thick Christian fiction, which is awesome, another thing that we read a lot of in our homeschool is missionary stories.
Yeah.
And we've read the Miller's Book of Missionary Stories, and then we read some other, Beth Gutenberger, well, I don't know how to pronounce her name. Anyway, she has some books, and I'll send you her name so we can put them in the show notes.
Perfect.
And then we are currently reading a missionary book about Nate Saint, who was one of the ones that was killed by that tribe in Ecuador.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, and they don't know what it's coming. They're like loving this guy.
Like,
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Find out at the end of the book that he dies.
Yeah.
Because the same thing with fiction and character and values, I'm like, I want to surround them with these stories of these amazing people.
Yeah.
Who have, like, God told them to go and they went and they sacrificed so much and the challenges they faced, but God was there with them. And so, I mean, I would rather fill their minds with those type of books than anything else. So that's kind of my goal and my thinking. And in fact, my daughter the other day is like, Mom, why are we reading all these missionary books? It's not like going to help us when we go to college. I'm like, actually, it does. It's teaching you about following God and serving him and standing up during, you know, challenging times in your life. I'm like, these are helping you just as much as that math that we're doing or just as much as that history that we're doing. So she's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Like, you don't realize now, but these stories are going to come back to you later and you will remember them and they will have an impact on your life for sure.
Yeah.
It's been cool with my son. My oldest has been a struggling reader and it's just been, it's been a really tough road. But he just in the last month has been sitting down and silent reading to himself his first book that's like a chapter book that he can come and tell me what it is he's reading about. And I never thought that this would have captivated him, but it's a biography on George Washington.
Oh, so cool.
It's so, like, it's the perfect size book. It's one of the landmark books, so it's not overwhelming for him, but he's getting so much out of it. Like, it almost makes me want to cry when he comes downstairs every day and he's like, oh, like, the war just started and he became a general. And, you know, like, it's just so amazing to hear not only that he's reading it well, but I feel like his first foray into really reading something to himself is about like this great man of history who helped shape our country. You know, that's, it's just cool when they get their hands on good books, you know?
Yeah. And you never know how that's going to influence him.
Yeah.
In his future. Cause we carry around all those stories with us.
Yeah.
Like I still think about all the stories I read as a kid. And I mean, now I'm writing books, but it's just amazing how those are with us. Like no one could take that away because they're just part of us.
Yeah, they really do. I talked about on an earlier episode, how much the Christy Miller series had an impact on my upbringing. And it was so funny because when I went to college, like I found this girl who's going to live in my dorm and we got to talking, we figured out we were both Christians. And then somehow Christy Miller came up and we realized like we were both looking for our Todd. And like, we just, we like had all of these, like this similar vocabulary about, you know, our life and what we were looking for. And we ended up getting our roommates changed so that we could be roommates and everything. And it all seriously was hinged on the fact that we'd both read all the Christy Miller books.
That is awesome. Yeah. Have you had Robin on your podcast yet?
I haven't, but I really want to. I'm nervous to ask her. See, she's like old friend for you. But for me, it's like, oh my goodness, I've been reading her work since I was 12.
Yeah, so I'll send her a note.
That's amazing.
Yeah, she was like one of my first mentors at my first writer's conference. I was 22 and pregnant with my third baby and I want to be a Christian writer. And Robin was just this sweet mother Robin that swept in and put her wings around me. And she's an awesome, awesome dear friend.
And you guys have written an amazing book together.
Yes. We wrote Praying for Your Future Husband.
Yes.
So yeah.
I got that for my niece years and years ago. It's like, you need to read this book and be thinking about this as you move forward with your life.
It's been the best because like that book is just still selling well. Like, because you know, there's teenage girls every year. Teenage girls. But the coolest thing is, I would say at least every month, maybe more than once a month, we get emails from girls.
Aww.
Like, I was praying for my future husband and God brought him. And we've gotten like wedding pictures.
Wow.
And Robin was invited to a wedding that was near her. You know, so
that's awesome.
From reading the book. I mean, it's so cool that, and you know, the whole part, I mean, people like, you know, you're just focused on marriage. And I mean, there's so much more. And actually, in the part of praying for your future husband, the subtitle is preparing your heart for his.
Yeah.
And it's talking about preparing your heart both for God and for the guy. So every time you say, like, pray for someone who is a God lover, and they were like, now what about you? You know, how are you serving God?
Yeah.
So everything turns it back
to
the young one. So it isn't just like this list, and it's like going to be this magic thing that's going to bring you this guy. But about who are you to attract that type of person, and how is your relationship with God? So it's been awesome just to continue to get notes and emails and stuff from young women who are blessed by that book.
How fun. And what a cool legacy to even just be able to pass on to your own girls and to be able to show them like how impactful it's been in all these other women's lives. That's pretty neat.
Yeah. I'll tell you a story real quick.
Okay.
So, because the rule is we didn't allow any dating at all until they're 16 with our new girls. I mean, that was kind of the rule with Leslie too, who's married, but we're like, not even, and by dating, we mean like getting to know a guy, not like serious dating, but nothing at all till they're 16. And they had to read, we only have one that's 16, right, that read it, but she had to read Praying for Your Future Husband.
Mm-hmm.
And then after she read it, then she's going to sit down and talk with me and go through all the chapters and what is she praying for and what is she looking for. And if there's a guy that she needs to sit down with me and go over, like, are the characters matching up to what she's been praying for?
Yeah.
So, and there's someone that she's, you know, really good friends with, and they've talked about dating. But what the book did for her, she realized, I'm not ready to be in a serious relationship now.
Yeah.
So she was like, okay, I'm going to read this book so I could date because there's this guy I like and he kind of likes me. And she read it and we've talked a little bit, and she realized, like, I'm not ready to date, which is amazing because, you know, she's our adopted girl who had been dating before we got her, and, you know, just junior high and high school dating. But she realized, like, no, you know what? God has more for me, and I need to work on myself first. And so that was cool, too. It wasn't just like, let me rush through this book so that I can start dating this guy. And they're still really good friends, and who knows, maybe in the future they will date. But that was really cool. I'm like, in my own house.
That's so awesome. I think it's so important to be instilling from a young age, or from the earliest age that you have your kids, like in your case, is just like this different perception of dating. And that's what we've been trying to do with our kids from really young ages. Like, it may all sound fun and just like, you know, the way our world looks at it, but there are consequences to you giving your heart to people. And that's so important. And it's just been, even from, you know, my husband and I and our like not that pretty past and, you know, all that stuff, being able to give our kids just a different perspective has been so refreshing, I think, as a mom, because like my parents, they didn't get saved until I was in junior high. Like they didn't even know there was a different perspective to give me, you know? And so so exciting to be able to come at it from a different worldview with my kids and see how they're responding to it differently, and how I'll even see, you know, my 10, almost 11-year-old, he'll turn away from the TV if there's something that he knows isn't honoring to himself or his future wife. Like he will talk about, you know, well, I don't want to do such and such a thing or give my heart away because someday I will be married and I want that girl to feel like I love her only. You know, it's like, it's so cool to hear those things coming out of their mouths.
Yeah. And at first we're like, why are we talking about this stuff with little kids? it like sticks and it goes with them now. And I've seen that in my two that are married. I just love, like, my daughter-in-law and my son-in-law. I'm like, you did such a good job picking them. But it was like, we've been praying. Like, I've been praying, they've been praying. And it's like God's hand. It's inviting God into the process.
Yes.
Instead of just, like, saying, we're going to do it, what we want and who we're attracted to or whatever. It's like inviting God in the process. And the really cool thing is like Corey wrote a letter for his future wife, Katie, even before wrote a song for her, even before he knew her. And then when we went to the Czech Republic, because my daughter's married to a Czech guy, mm-hmm. and so his family's Czech and they speak Czech. And so everything we had to translate between us. And after the wedding, and we just love Honza. Like, he's this awesome Christian guy. And after the wedding, I had someone go up and help me translate to Honza's mom. Like, I've been praying for him since Leslie was born, like,
yeah,
his whole life. I've been praying for him. And she translated back. She's like, and I've been praying for Leslie too. Aww. I've been praying for Honza. And we're both bawling. Like, we can't even speak the same language. Someone's had to translate, but we're like hugging and bawling, thinking, here's two moms on the other side of the world, like, praying for their kids. And so that was super cool to know. Yeah. And I was even talking to my little girls who are 7 and 9. And I'm like, we could be praying right now for your future husband. They're like, what?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, he's set probably like 7, 8, 9 around.
Yeah. You know?
And he's like riding his bike right now.
Yeah.
He's like playing with Legos. And they're like, that's weird.
That's so fun, though. And it's just, yeah, it's just such a cool perspective to have. And then for you to have been able to be on the other side of that as well. How amazing.
Yeah, it's cool to see that, yeah, God does show up.
Yeah, that's, oh, I love that. That just gives me chills. That's a great story. Okay, so moving on from that, I do want to talk a little bit more. Last time you were on, we talked about kind of having balance with a house full of kids. And you were kind of just really in the midst of getting into your groove with how your family was shaping up. But now, these months later, I think it'd be great to talk about kind of how to maintain joy with a house full and how you're taking care of yourself now.
Yeah, I would love to talk about that. You know, I think it's just such a crazy thing when we, you know, first added in a baby, which was easy, you know, compared to later. And then we added in two kids who both had traumatic pasts and a lot of emotional needs. And we were able to manage that. Then adding in four preteen and teen girls who we already have like the hormones already.
Yeah.
And then you have the traumatic past and failed adoptions in the past. I mean, just a lot. And then you're adding in all these new siblings. And so, I mean, it really was balanced. Like, and it's, you know, we talked about, like, you have to figure out what's most important and focusing in on the most important things and cutting out things off your schedule, you know, all those things.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the last 6 months, we have definitely settled into our routine. Like, we have our rhythm to our family, and we homeschool and we have dinners together and we serve together in church. So we found our rhythm. And over the last 6 months, God's just been speaking to me about just finding joy. Because, like I mentioned, it's never going to be the place where the house is always clean.
Yeah.
Or that, you know, everything's always organized, but seeing joy in the moment and, like, just, you know, looking into my kids' eyes instead of looking at my phone and seeing joy there, or taking times to do special things with them, having conversations, and, you know, if they, you know, hey, can I talk to you? Like, really taking the time to talk to them.
Yeah.
And then just finding joy, like, even when I'm doing laundry, like, this is a big pile of laundry, but how amazing, God, that you gave these orphans homes and that you've connected us all together. And, or I'll see, like, one of the older girls playing with one of the younger kids playing a game together. And I'm like, how amazing, God, that you're able to take kids from various traumatic pasts and bring us all together in a family. And so, you know, it's just amazing. You have to really look for those moments of joy. And I put on Facebook probably like a month ago, like, when's the last time you experienced exuberant joy? And people are like, my wedding. And I'm like, wait, we need to be doing this like on a daily basis. And I think as moms, we just get so focused on, like, I need to catch up, or I need to get this organized or that done. And then we could, like, think about finding joy, or, you know, going out to yogurt, or doing all those little things. And it's like, no, we're never going to be caught up. We're never going to have all our ducks in a row. And just when I am seeking joy, when I, like, I'm choosing, like, to smile at my kids, like, when they first come in, you know, in the morning, like, I choose to smile. I choose to be joyful. I choose not to get overwhelmed by the laundry. And I have to say, my house is probably messier than it's ever been in my whole life. The laundry pile's bigger. I have work projects piled up. But it's like, it's a choice, and to seek God in those moments. And when I choose to do that, then it, like, is a ripple effect with the kids. Because when I'm cranky, oh my goodness, the ripple effect, everyone gets
it's
cranky.
So true.
But when I choose to find those moments of joy, there's a ripple effect to that too, and it really, really makes a difference.
I think that's just so good. Like you were saying, you have to do it in the midst of what you're doing. And I noticed, I don't know, there'd been a lot going on. It'd been kind of a rough winter. And I think I'd stopped kind of like, I couldn't see past the end of my nose for a while, just because everything just felt so overwhelming and so hard. And I started to see it in my kids. Like, they're needing more of me than I feel like I've been able to give. Like, they were so craving, one, seeing mom be joyful and having me just really see them too. And there was this one night where, oh, it was a miracle. I got all the kids to bed, and even my littlest one was sleeping, and she's so hard to get to bed. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go downstairs and I'm going to play in my planner and I'm going to read a book and I'm going to like do all these things for me. And then my oldest son came downstairs and he was like, I can't sleep. And I could have gotten really frustrated about it, but just looking at his little eyes, I was like, I need to just take this time with him. And we went and we snuggled up on the couch. We actually got out a book that he had been wanting me to read to him for a while. And it was a sequel to another book that we had read. And so we just sat down and we were just laying together and reading. And I'd get to the end of the chapter and he'd say, just one more chapter. And I'm like, okay, just one more chapter. And so we ended up reading like 5 or 6 chapters in this book. But then he started opening up about other things in his life. And we both, I feel like we woke up the next morning, even though we were tired because we'd stayed up kind of late. And I think we both felt refreshed from having spent that time together. And I could see the little joy in his face, which then made me feel like, you know, it was okay that I didn't take that time for me. Like, it was actually life-giving to me, too, to be able to pour into him in that way. And it was just, yeah, I think it's...
And that's something he'll, like, always remember.
Yeah.
Like, he'll always remember that time.
Yeah.
And it's going to be with him. I love that. And I love, and it is true. Like, we crave that quiet time so much. And, you know, I'm speaking at these conferences and I love going and speaking because I have like a quiet hotel room.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yay. Well, then I just felt convicted because I don't get one-on-one or even like one-on-three time.
Yeah.
Very much because there's so many of them. So I'm like, I should take a couple with each of these conventions. I'm taking 2-to-1 conference and 3 to another conference, and they're going to be there with me and get to stay in the hotel room. And, you know, it could be like, oh, I'm losing my quiet time where I could just like have a hotel room to myself. And I'm like, no, I'm going to choose to spend this time and give them this time and make something fun of it, because it'll be both towns they haven't been to before. And also, it's those little choices in the moment that may seem like it's a huge sacrifice, but later it fills us up too. You know,
it's like, it really
that
does.
Was a good moment.
And those moments, even when we're not just totally focusing on ourselves, end up bringing us joy.
Yes.
I think it's part of like when you're doing your job well, like you can walk away and feel like, okay, like that was a good mothering moment, like to acknowledge those. I don't always have those. So when you actually feel like, all right, I can find joy in that because I actually did a good job in that moment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we need that too. And it's so interesting because when we did this trauma therapy with the kids, we took, see, Casey was 2.5 when I started trauma therapy with him, so just a little guy, and he was disruptive and active and disobeyed. I mean, he just had been moved around his whole life, like all he knew was disruption. And the thing that they had me do over and over with him wasn't like they're not like, this is how you discipline him or this is how you do whatever. They had me sit down with him 10 minutes a day. Oh, 5 or 10 minutes a day. So I didn't even have to be like, she's like, even if you can't do 10 minutes, do 5 minutes.
Wow.
And they had me like focus on what he was doing. So if he's like, we had a special little box of toys, and I'd go into a room just with Casey and like focus what he was doing. So like, oh, you're lining up the cars. And then if he said something like blue car, I would repeat, that's the blue car. And then praising him, like, if he'd hand me a car, thank you for sharing your car with mommy. And they would have me, I did it every day for like 6 months. And then I would go to therapy and they would be in one of those rooms with the mirror, and like they can see you but you can't see them, and then I'd have an earpiece.
Yeah.
And then they would like school me on how to do it better, like how to praise him better, how to reflect what he's saying better. And for like 6 months I'm like, seriously, this is like the therapy that I'm, you know, coming. But it helped so much.
That's
like just
so cool.
That it just, and I think, and I realized, you know, after 6 months, I kind of do that with all the kids, like, oh yeah, you know, I notice what they're doing, and you praise what they're doing well, because when you praise what they're doing well, it's, that's what's repeated.
Yeah.
And this, what I thought was a silly little thing, I realized this can apply to all our lives, like with all our kids, just to listen to them and repeat what you hear and to praise them is, it really makes a difference. So and the therapist knew that. So
well, and it's telling of our culture too. I mean, we are constantly being distracted by things. There's so much going on. We're constantly looking at our phones. Like, we have to learn this practice of listening to our kids. Like,
exactly.
I think it's, that goes whether you have adopted kids or not. It's kind of like across the board, we all have to learn how to do that better.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what they crave. That's what they need. And then I mean, he stopped all the destructive behaviors because
that's amazing.
He built a relationship with me. And he was getting his needs met, and he didn't have to seek negative attention. And it's like, wow, this crazy little thing really works.
Yeah, that's just so good to hear. I think that's a really good point to end on. After this, this has been a full conversation. It's been so much fun. But I think that's just a really good note to end on. Like, we're all going to find more joy in our lives if we're really listening to each other and pouring into our families in those ways.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today, Tricia. It has been a lot of fun.
Thanks for having me. I love listening to your podcast.
Oh, thank
you. I love being on it. So, and thanks for just sharing about my book too.
Yes, I'm so excited to read it. I can't wait.
Well, I'm going to be sending you a couple of them. So.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay, we'll talk soon.
All right, thanks.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
All right, that's it. As always, you can find our show notes at boldturquoise.com/29 for this episode. We'll have all the goodness, links to Trisha's book, and of course, links to Jelly Telly so that you can get signed up for your free trial with them and give them a go for this Easter. Thank you again to all of my loyal listeners. It's been so fun hearing from so many of you lately and being able to answer your questions and do our Periscope shows, and I'm just really enjoying the community and all the fun that we've been having lately. Thank you again to all of you who have rated and reviewed the podcast. It just makes such a difference for getting the word out there about the show. So if you haven't done that, be sure to just run over to iTunes really quickly and give just a quick little rating and review. I so appreciate when you're able to take the time to do that. All right, ladies, that's all for this show. But until next time, go be bold and gracious.